Today on the podcast, I had the pleasure of interviewing the delightful Sharmila Saigonkur, and she's in Canada, Ontario, Canada, and just effervescent and so full of love for the work and passion and willingness to be of service. Some of what we talk about in this episode is this idea of networking in your community. And I was so impressed with all of the ideas that she found, ways to show up and to get involved in the community and meet people where they are and get them experiencing yoga so that they'd want to do more of it. She basically says, if you see a little opening, you've got to take action and know that you can make a difference. And so she does things like, hey, I want to teach this group and we don't have a space. How about I go and canvass for the mayor and hopefully the town will then give me a space to have these yoga classes. So she's working her way into different organizations and showing the value, giving them the experience. And it seems like everything she touches turns to gold. And I say that not because I want people to go out and make a ton of money, not that, but her willingness to show up and be of service and let them experience it so that they can say, you know what, we need this every day, or all of my chiropractic clients need to come to yoga also. She just outlined so many different experiences of how she met certain people in town, how she canvassed, how she knocked on doors, how she made herself part of those organizations, and it came back tenfold. And she has a very successful business out of her home studio. That's another thing. We talked about the pros and cons of having a home studio, and for her, it's just working so beautifully. She doesn't have to spend extra time commuting. She doesn't have to pay for a space. She can be cooking food on the stove while class is going on. And her referrals come directly from chiropractors, so she has an idea of who these people are. There's not strangers coming into her house. So it's a beautiful way to be of service, a beautiful business model, if you will. So I really want you to hear this episode, both how she shows up as a yoga therapist and all the wisdom. We talked about lifestyle management. We talked about chronic pain. We talked about how to start a session and the gentility of working with the breath before you add a bunch of postures. I mean, she laid out her whole system and what's working for her after 14 or more years of experience. So especially for you new yoga therapists, or the yoga therapists that maybe haven't found a way to be as successful as you'd like to be, she is giving you the gold. She is telling you all the different steps on her journey to support you in finding a way to create your yoga therapy business. And another thing, towards the end of the podcast, she tells the story of her father being in the hospital, possibly needing a heart transplant, and how she worked with him through love and care and support and breath work. And that's what got her interested in, how she frames it, medical yoga. She realized that there is a place for us to help people in the healthcare system. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode with Sharmila Saigonkur, and I am so happy to introduce you to this very precious human being. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. Did you know that we give a free gift with each and every guest? Every month, we go back and find a gift either from the guests themselves, or we find a research article or something really interesting that goes along with the topic, and we send it out once a month. There's many different categories you can sign up for, and look in the show notes and it will show you how you can get to that link to sign up for our free gift every single guest. All right, let's get into the show and go meet our guest for today. Welcome, Sharmila. So nice to see you today. Thank you for coming to the podcast.
Thank you, Amy, for having me over. It's really my pleasure to be here with you.
Tell our listeners where you are living and where you're working.
I live in Ontario, Brooklyn, Ontario, which is in Canada, and I have my own studio. I work with chiropractors in town. It's a very small scale word-to-mouth business. And because I just want to make sure people who come who really want to make a difference, not just for general. So that's what I do on a very small scale. Even classes are very small. I don't take more than five or six at a time. And times four if I need to customize the practice. And for yoga therapy client, it's one-on-one.
Beautiful. So let's start right there. Today we're going to be talking about chronic pain, but I think our listeners would love to hear just a little tidbit about how you connected with chiropractors in your town to be able to do this work. And I don't know if that's in their chiropractic office or if they refer to you. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, but both. Initially, when I started yoga therapy, the entire journey started in 2008 when I stumbled upon where one of my friends asked me that, would you like to go for a fundraising event? And I said, sure, because a friend asked me and I couldn't say no to. I knew yoga, but never practiced before. I only practiced in the school in India as a part of the competition, sports competition, but never was aware or familiar with any kinds of yoga, what exactly yoga means. I didn't know that. But when I practiced at the fundraising event, it just felt really good. I never felt that before. And I thought this is something I really want to pursue. I want to feel it every single day. And I said, I'm going to pay full upfront and I'm going to join. And my teacher was a physician. So that really helped because she was a family practitioner. And the way she introduced not just a meditation, but physical body. So she was introducing all the science side of yoga and then kind of drove us into the spirituality of yoga. That really made an impression on me. And I decided to join. From there, it's like one thing led to the other. I wanted to do something more than just a poses. So I got into yoga therapy and we had to do these clinical hours. And I said, you know what? If I don't take the lead, because I was just so passionate about it, I wanted to knock on all the doors, possible doors, to see if they can allow me to do the clinical assessment at their clinic. And there was a natural therapy clinic in our town, very close to my place where I live. And I knocked on the door. The doctor wasn't there. And I said, okay, I'll come back. I went back again. I didn't give up. I went back. And it was just heartwarming that he said, sure, you can come in. I'll introduce to all my patients. And from there, I shadowed him for 2 years. And I did all my clinical hours. I learned lot of biochemistry from him, biophysiology from him, despite of I was learning yoga therapy. But there are a lot of things you don't know unless you do practical. So I learned a lot from him. And then he started saying that yoga should be top of the triangle. So why don't you come and work with me as an associate? So I said, okay, I'll do that. It was a quite a good experience. And so he started telling his patient, go see Sharmila first, and then I will do the treatment, or do the treatment and go see her after so you can maintain. So that's how I got into chiropractic office. And I used to practice there at the clinic because he had a space, but now he's moved to Vancouver, so I cannot practice at his clinic. So there's another chiropractor I speak to. She's actually my student as well. And she started referring her clients to me. And I asked her, do I need to come into your clinic to practice? And she says, why bother paying? You have a studio at home. Why don't you just practice at home? I'll send my patients to you. So that's what I do now.
That is such an amazing story on so many levels. Number one, your tenacity to go knocking on doors. I teach a business class and I tell people, like, just go introduce yourself, get engaged with the community. And people, that's really hard for them to have that tenacity to knock on doors. Another thing that I love about what you said is that you shadowed him in his work. Does that mean you sat in on actual client sessions to see how he was working with them?
Exactly. Exactly. So whenever he would have a patient, he would ask me, why don't you come in? And literally while he was treating the patient, he would introduce them to me and they will talk about it. Even like he's adjusting the back, and he would tell me, let me know what to look for, because some of the stretches or some of the adjustment, they really tie into yoga stretches as well. Then we would work together on that. And it was fascinating experience. I really enjoyed it. And then afterwards, we'll do follow-up. Like we'll sit down together and we'll talk about it, whatever the particular patient is, what both of us need to do to make sure that person feels better. And that's something I feel that it's missing at many places in healthcare, that it's like an octopus race. Like everybody works as a one single body part instead of working together. And that's what me and him, and along with other person who was a physiotherapist and colonics, we work together on that to see patient as a one person and working together what needs to be done for patients to feel better.
It's just so beautiful. I have a personal chiropractor, and he and I, for my own back, we do this. He'll tell me, okay, here's where the problem is. If you do extension on this vertebrae, thoracic spine 9 or whatever, and then I'll figure out what poses I can do to help that particular area for myself. So I love the idea that you were doing this in a more clinical way for clients. And I bet you probably learned so much from him, and he probably learned so much from you.
Absolutely. We both learn a lot. And there's one example. There was a lady, and she's still a student. She used to come to his office every week from 1 hour to come to his office. He was a very good educator, and he was a very good businessman, but very good educator. So he introduced her to me because she had a lower back issue. She used to be a tennis player, like just a casual tennis player, but she had a lower back issue for a very long time. And once I started working on her, she started coming once in 2 weeks. But that didn't bother him at all, because some people will have that, like, I'm losing my patient. Our goal was to make sure the patient feels better and sustains it. And then she still comes, but she doesn't have any back issues anymore. So she does not go to the chiropractor anymore. And that was kind of empowering for her. And that's like achievement for both of us, that we made a difference together.
And that the outcome or the success is that they don't need the chiropractor anymore. I love that. What
Yes,
is it
and
that?
it's sad, but the thing is the fact that that's what we are in this field. And even I do the same. Once I'm done the client thing, like I tell them, either you join the class or you don't need me anymore, because we are cutting down the dependency, right? That's what the whole compliance is about the yoga therapy, that not keeping patients or client dependent on you.
Do you find though with low back care, I'm just thinking of my own low back, I'll be really good for a number of months and then I'll get under a lot of stress and I'll start eating poorly and I'll start picking up boxes I have no business picking up and I'll need care again. Do you find that sometimes people weave back into your care or once they're gone, are they gone?
I have a couple of clients where they do come in, and what I do is I don't just let them go. What I tell them is, once you're done your yoga therapy treatment, once I see that you're stable, you don't feel that pain often, you have to come and practice. You have to join the practice, either with me or somewhere else, but you have to do those stretches, because that's a part of the discipline. You cannot just not do it, because stress adds the factor into it. I myself, like, you will feel the pain if you're stressed out. You will feel the pain in your shoulder, in your knee, and in your back. So, and for that, you have to practice. You have to step back when you feel the pain, but you cannot stop doing the stretches, which is very important. Unless you're inflamed, take it back and don't do it. But once you're okay, start your stretching again.
It reminds me of moving from chikitsa or therapy into rakshana, which is kind of a maintenance mode, and hopefully staying over there. But occasionally, I'm sure people come back to the
They
therapy.
do. So once in a while, they do come back. I have another client who has rheumatoid arthritis, and I did the yoga therapy for her for about 2 years. And that's way long, but it wasn't just the physical body, it was the emotional body I was working on as well. I was okay with it. And now she's a student. I mean, she's no more client, she's a student, and she's okay. But I said, you only come in when you feel that helpless, that you need one-on-one attention. I won't do yoga therapy, but I will do yoga practice with you one-on-one to see where you're lacking And then we can take it from there. But you don't need a yoga therapy. You don't need that clinical assessment unless you fell down and hurt yourself. Something new came up, then we'll do the assessment. Other than that, you don't need it. So, yes, occasionally I do see clients coming back, but not for yoga therapy. It's just for one-on-one because they feel helpless at that moment.
Yeah. Are you someone that loves to be in tune with the cycles of nature? Well, there's something I've been wanting to sponsor for a long time, and I finally got my act together to do it. And that is that we would have community celebrations, reflections, meditations, where we come together every time there's a new moon and a full moon. This is something that really resonates with my heart because every time I look into the sky and realize that we're getting close to a new moon or a full moon, I have this internal urge to kind of set some intentions and move forward in a new way. And I would like to share that with you, and I would like our community to kind of have that very natural marker in time every couple of weeks. So for the months of June, July, and August of 2024, this is going to be completely free. It's a beta test. We want to see how it goes. We want to see if you like it. We want to see if you show up. And basically, it will be on Zoom. We'll do about an hour of meditation, of education, of journaling, of connection. And we'll just have those markers in time every couple of weeks. And if it goes well, and we all want to continue after June, July, and August of 2024, we will continue. So we hope to see you there. You can look in the show notes for more information. And is it nice to have the chiropractor do the formal kind of clinical assessment and then refer to you? Somehow that feels like it would be so supportive to know exactly what is going on in that person based on the chiropractic assessment.
I think it's very important for them to do the assessment because they have studied thoroughly in that area. And then taking their advice and then working together, what poses I can add and what poses I can avoid to make sure the patient or the client is safe. And it's very important to have their assessment. Yeah, there are points where some other yoga therapist referring it to me. Then there's no chiropractor, but I do ask, have you seen anybody? And if they have not, then I have to take it very slowly, do my entire range of motion assessment, and then I start with the breath. I do not start with poses. I start with really tiny, tiny steps. And if I feel safe, then I keep adding every week something else into it instead of adding just new all the time.
And are people okay with that kind of slower approach where they first learn how to breathe properly and maybe reduce stress, and then over time just adding a few postures and seeing how they affect the body and refining it? Are people okay with that, or do they want like a workout?
They are okay with it. I mean, I have both examples. I tell them upfront that this is very slow. Your mind is going to say, get out. This is too slow for me. And just try it at least for 4 weeks. Don't just come here for a week and say, it doesn't work for me, because initial response coming from your mind is going to be, no, I don't want to do it. This is not for me. Because I was there at once that this is not for me, despite of me paying upfront. Every single week, I thought about that. Do I have to go to a class? Because I wasn't used to it. So it takes a while for your mind to get trained. And then when you really find your niche, yes, when you connect yourself, that's when you say, I want to go. And I have it with all my students. They always say initially they would miss the classes, just like I did it too. And they say, now we cannot miss it. You cannot go anywhere because we miss your classes. And again, I'm thinking in the back of mind that I'm creating dependency, but I'm saying it's a good dependency. They want to stretch with me, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's so interesting that idea of starting new habits, right? That at first it's so hard, but then once the habit is part of your lifestyle, it's hard to let it go.
It's hard because that feeling is just so deep down connected with your own self. And it's really hard to describe. It's like peace, love, joy, like very authentic. Even it doesn't last very long, but that impression stays for long.
Yeah. I wonder, I'm thinking for us and our clients, when we're kind of revved up and feeling uncomfortable or maybe having some pain, like there's a little resistance to want to go inward and connect with self, I find. And then, afterwards it feels great and you're glad you did it. But that kind of turning point to admit that we're suffering, slow down, bring the attention and the senses inward, like that can be a painful little transition.
It is. It is. I'll give you a very recent example. Just a couple of days ago, last week, I play badminton. I do take the dance classes. I do teach 4 times a week. Plus, there were a couple of things. We do take care of the senior as well in the house. So there were a couple of things going on. And I'm just thinking now is because of all that, for some reason, I had this not pain, but discomfort, which I never had it in my lower back. I had it once in a while, but it didn't last. You forget about it. When you're better, you forget all about it. You start doing whatever you want to do, and then it comes back and it reminds you, I'm here. Be careful. Take care of yourself. And plus, working in the yard, I developed this back pain just around sacrum. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? I didn't do anything which is improper, didn't run, didn't jump, nothing. But then I said, yeah, I was going to a lot of things over the week. And maybe is that caused the pain, chronic pain? And it wasn't chronic, but it lasted for a week. I literally took an appointment physio as well, that something I'm not understanding, why my one side is hurting and not the other. Why my knee is bothering? And then I said, you know what? I need to slow down. I really need to slow down. I didn't go for a dance class. One day I skipped the badminton as well. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to rest, relax, see what happens over 24, 72 hours. Do my stretches. Whenever I have time, I'll do my stretches. I did that, hot and cold compressions, all that thing. Today, I don't even remember that I had a pain last week. So I guess just giving yourself a time. As you said, connecting with your own self, going back to the basic, to the root, and honoring your responses coming from within you allows you to kind of settle down. And if still the pain is there, of course you need help. You need a medication. You need to see the doctor, specialist, whoever it is. But instead of getting frustrated, you can manage initially and then see where it takes you.
It sounds to me like what you just said was the pain can almost be a messenger that it's time to slow down, that it's time to turn inward and take a rest and come back to self. Instead of the pain being the problem, the pain is actually a messenger with good news to get you back on track.
Yeah, and it's always like pain is a signal. It's an intelligent response coming from your body and the brain saying that do something different. Don't keep doing whatever you're doing. It didn't work. So slow down, back off, and then take a charge of your life. Do not get frustrated. Without frustrating, just give me some time and space and see what happens.
Beautiful. So what do you think is the main mechanism that helps people feel better? Those people who are having some chronic pain, they come to you as a yoga therapist. What do you think is the main mechanism that helps?
So far in last 14, 15 years, what I've seen is unless somebody hits you by 2x4, you don't know where their pain is coming from. No 2x4 fell on your head or there's no event involved. It happened over the time. Pain does not occur overnight. It's a gradual progression over the time, whatever you're doing. And for you to manage that, you have to give some time to see, find the root cause. And nobody knows at that moment what the exact root cause is because it's just such a complex body we have. So what I do whenever someone comes to me that I have a knee pain or back pain, I kind of educate them about their body through range of motion, through breath assessment, talking to them about their lifestyle, see what they do every single day, what they think, not just feeding your mouth or body, what do they feed to their brain as well or the mind as well? Because our senses feeds us so much information and we don't know what we're doing with that information. So there was a client where there was no event other than for the knee, but it was really in a place where just didn't know what to do, right? So sometimes you have to call them. You probably feeling very insecure. So see if you can find the security that causing you tense up. Your self-esteem is probably not balanced. So try to find something which can hold you, which can ground you. Or you're probably looking for attention, negative attention, but you may think it's a positive attention. So all those things are feeding your body. and maybe you're getting those aches and pains, and it didn't happen overnight. It happens for so many years. You're going through that same thinking, same pattern. You're going through that, and one day body says, boom, I'm going to feel pain here, there, everywhere. So that's the inflammatory response. And all the chronic pains come from inflammation, and inflammation happened due to stress as well.
Do your clients buy into that right away? Do they get it that I've been overly stressed for a long time? I've been building inflammation, and there's finally a straw that's broken the camel's back, and now I need to change directions in my lifestyle or how much I'm working or how I perceive things. Do they buy into that?
It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in one class. So what I do initially when they come in, and once I do the physical assessment, range of motion, you're giving them everything. You're educating them along the way. Mm-hmm. Look how you walk. Look how you're standing. Look what your balance is. So once they have that on their plate, they say, oh, okay, this is what it is. I educate them about sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system as well. When they lie down for the breath assessment, I begin with three-part breath, which is bringing their hand onto their belly. Initially, their breath is not there at all. Like, it's very shallow, very quick, all that. But we take a time. We take about 10 minutes to go through that. Even if they don't get it, it's okay. But it's an initial assessment for them to understand that breath is an important part of their life to calm their nervous system. But most of the time, in my experiences, except one or two, they were okay, and they told me after the breath assessment that this really works. I felt calm. And that stays there for that week. But next time when they come in, I do the same thing again, do the breath assessment, check different range of motion, give them maybe forward fold or back bend or just a small step like fold with sound, like Hara breath. Mm-hmm. I give them that as well and then say, yeah, it felt good. We feed on each other and then see whether they're buying into it or not. But I haven't had any experience where, other than one or two, that they were okay. They bought into after a couple of weeks that breath is important part, because they start practicing at home, and I tell them do it before going to bed every day or do it as soon as you get up. If they get into the routine, it's good. But if they don't get into routine, they're not going to find the difference. They won't buy into it because experience allows them to buy into it.
Right. I think that is so important. A lot of people say, well, you know, I'm going to go present to some hospital executives and try to get in the door of yoga therapy into the hospital. And I always say, let people experience it. That's the best way for them to buy in. Information is great. Research is great. But in terms of saying, wow, this made a difference and I want to keep doing this, I think it's the real experience of feeling your parasympathetic nervous system go into that rest and digest and relaxation response. What do you think?
I totally agree with you. And that's exactly what I hear from people now. Someone who never did the yoga before, now been with me for the last 14 years. And whatever the issue she's going through, she said, I do my meditation. And she said, I would not have thought in a million years that I would do meditation. But because that experience, she feels that she wants to have that experience, even if I'm not there. So there are other clients and students say the same thing. I just breathe in deeply, and that just makes a whole difference. And it worked with me as well when I went for the fundraising event before even I started yoga. And that experience allowed me to get into the door of practicing yoga to begin with. If someone would have told me this feels good, practice yoga, I don't think I would have ever done yoga by just listening to someone's telling me it's good for you.
You know, I can totally relate to that. Like, I used to teach college students, and if someone told them, oh, you'll feel better, you'll have less anxiety, less depression, you'll sleep better, they would just be like, yeah, 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 whatever. But when they came to class and they went through it, and at the end, they felt peaceful, they were hooked. There was no argument.
It's like a drug. It's literally like a drug. Another story I have where I knocked on many doors because I believed I was just so, not about me, but the field of yoga, the connection, the grounding, the science. It's a deep science which a lot of people do not know. General population, yoga for them is wearing clothes which fits you shows your shape. But that's fine, whatever the thing is. So I did knock on the door at the Ability Center in Whitby, which is, I think, only one center in Canada for now, where all kinds of disabled population people come there to explore or to learn. And I was just a supply teacher there. This was many years ago. And they said, can you teach a class to the students' iThrive program, where adult, disabled, all kinds of disabled students were there or children were there. And I had never done that before. I couldn't say no to, because that was one, it would have been very good experience. And the second, it would have been satisfying. So I said yes to that. When I walked in the door, children full of various kinds of disabilities, some could not even understand what's right or left. I tried to come up with a language which they could understand. It was 45 minutes. I did it fine, but I wasn't really happy with it because I didn't have any information about them. It was just a supply teaching class. Second time they asked me, I said, okay, sure. But then what I did meanwhile, I observed what this group of children do during their free hours throughout the day. What I learned that they like to play a ball. So I use the language of ball, throw the ball to the net or throw the ball over or throw the ball to someone else. That made the whole difference at the end of the class, because they couldn't understand lift the right foot. I used the ball as an analogy. I didn't have a ball with me, it's just a language. They were so tired. All of them slept like a baby. And their recreational therapist came to me that, why don't you come in every single day? I said, I would love to, but you have to speak to the administrator for them to have a class like this. So the long story short, what I want to say is experience. Me experiencing how to teach allowed me to offer, and then them experiencing me allowed them to relax. So it works both ways. That's something I will never forget.
I just love how willing you are to meet the present moment and just show up humbly and give it your best shot and learn about the clients so that you can serve them better. I think that's what yoga therapy is supposed to be, and probably all of yoga, but you're just demonstrating it so beautifully today to show us how you kind of get in the door and you're useful and you're of service. And next thing you know, they want you there more often.
This is what I pointed. It's like when you said having both sides on the same page allows us to excel even further. So meeting the client or the student wherever they are at, and then walking them where you want them to be.
Right.
That helps them. That helps me to grow as well. So that's what I have been doing so far to deal with people or students with the chronic pain for so many years.
And you had mentioned with the people that you work with who have chronic pain, there's kind of a lifestyle assessment and looking at that. Can you talk a little bit about the idea of lifestyle?
Lifestyle, like some of them sit for a very long time due to work. Some of them, whenever they are stressed out, they will go to the chocolate or wine, or they will stay up, watch something, not enough sleep, or they will pop a pill often.
Yep.
So mostly what I've noticed is when they were stressed out, they eat all kinds of food. That's something. And they don't go to bed early. And not having routine as go for walk, even take a break during work. Every hour, just take a 5-10 minutes walk. Even in your yard, just go out and connect with the nature. Not with the phone, connect with the nature. That kind of brings you back. Just you feel that joy. You may not feel it today. You will feel it in a week. But try to make that into a routine. And whenever you feel like, okay, I'm stressed out, I'm going to indulge myself, you cannot really stop at once, but you can start with a small quantity. I'm going to indulge with something else, or dark chocolate instead of just any chocolate. I'll have a dark chocolate, or I'll have a 1/4 of a chocolate, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say no to your mind. At least you're more aware than before. So all I tell them is be aware whatever you do. Observe your action. Understand where your mind is going. So that's what I've noticed in terms of lifestyle, that not having exercise or taking a break or just going to a food which is inflammatory instead of reducing inflammation, and not having that awareness. It's not what you put here, but it's what you put here as well in your mind too. It's very important, because I tell them this is our fruit, Mind is our fruit. If the juices are rotten, everything is going to be rotten. So you have to think about where your mind is going. If your mind is saying, have a chocolate, or watch a movie at night, stay up late, you can stay up once in a while. It's no big deal, but be aware of that. Don't just do it without having awareness. So that does help them to have that awareness, and they start shifting towards making right choices.
Also with the mind, do you think things like watching the news, getting angry too often, getting irritable, or thinking really negative thoughts, do you ever talk to your clients about those types of things?
I do. We just had that on the other day, right before the class started. I did not read the news. I like to stay away from the news because they kind of startle your mind. You don't want that. I mean, if I want to read the news, I'll just go on a computer or my phone and read whatever I want to, not because what media is throwing at me. So just before the class, a student goes, oh, there was an accident. Did you hear about it? I said, sorry, I don't want to read it. I know it happened. It was really sad, but I don't want to go too much detail into it because that's not going to do any favor to me or to you. So instead of reading about details, just offer a prayer. And then be at it, because that will upset you. Unknowingly, you end up stimulating all those cells and it just makes you angry. And so I do talk to them about it, that if you want to read something which brings the pleasure, not the pain. They are two sides of the coin, but you decide what you want to read. It's up to you. So we do talk often about it. But again, you can't really control that. Some people, like, they get drawn towards all the media, and especially before going to bed, it's not even important. So we do talk about it. But client, I can ask, but students, I have not asked them, like, what are you going to watch, or what have you heard?
You know, it's so hard because there's a whole type of yoga around social justice and fairness and equity. And so on one hand, you want to be informed and you want to support people in this way. But then there can be this line where we get so dysregulated ourselves. I think we have to pull ourselves back and say, what state of being can I be the most helpful and be of service from that place? And I think especially for yoga teachers and yoga therapists, and I see this in you so clearly, that you're bringing a very sattvic presence. And that's rare in the world. There may not any doctors or dentists or other healthcare professionals that are showing up with that very sattvic presence to kind of help people's nervous systems come back towards the parasympathetic arm of the nervous system.
To continue with that, what I have started doing it, because I hear this often whenever we gather for the group practice, people start talking about the news. So what I started doing that, I initiate, okay, share about your plants. Did you plant anything in your garden? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so we start with the news. It's like a sangha. So mm-hmm. instead of sharing what you heard, so I said, you know what, I need to steer in a such a way that before we begin our practice, our mood is very grounded. It's very calm. And then we can start our practice. And to add more into that, I don't get into meditation right away. I start with asana, our physical body. We got to connect with our own self first before we allow our mind to connect, because mind doesn't connect right away. It takes a longer time to connect. So we kind of do the stretches, talk about the stretches, laugh about a few things, crack some jokes. And then when the mood is created, after that, we kind of settle down into a centering meditation practice and breathing practice. And then once again, we do the stretches afterwards. But that's something I do. So I call that as a centering, which is having sangha, which is exchanging conversation about whatever they are doing in their yard, or if the season is right, or if they have gone for a walk, or how was their day at work, whatever. And then we begin our practice. So it's like, you know, having the social aspect before we practice our yoga. So that's sangha, satsanga, and then you start your practice. So that has been helping me, and that has been helping them as well. So it's like they're bringing their energy into the practice. I'm sharing my energy into the practice, and it becomes a space. We call it our space.
I love that. I think people underestimate the power of that, because once someone has come into a positive or maybe neutral space and they can let down and they can be part of a community, They can take their time working towards meditation and walk out feeling better. Like, that makes them want to come back again. What I like to call mine is the peaceful sanctuary. Once you step into the peaceful sanctuary, that's a sacred place where you get to connect with yourself, slow down, let go. Yeah. And then that expectation is kind of set.
Absolutely. And that place, like, you really have a hard time to describe. It's the feeling. You can only feel it. You can only feel the energy. And that's something I find that whenever they come to the studio, they feel that energy because that's what we do as a routine. And they tell me that it's not the same when they're practicing online, because once in a while they have to practice online since they couldn't make it. And they say it's not the same, not just because they couldn't see me, but more than it's a feeling of relaxation, feeling of being there, whether we see it or not, but energy is there. We just can't see it with our naked eyes, but it's there. And we connect through that. We exchange that.
So tell me this, some of these questions I didn't tell you I was going to ask because I get curious and interested as I talk to you. How is it having a studio in your home? Sometimes I think, oh, that would be wonderful. And then other times I think, oh, I'm not sure I would want so many people coming to my home. How is that?
There are pros and cons to it. The benefit of that is, of course, I have a family as well, so family is at home. But luckily, the honor that I'm practicing, I'm teaching. So either they're out at that time for hour and a half, or they will not make a noise at all. They will be doing something else because we eat dinner together. So after I finish my class, we will have a dinner together. But I keep everything ready beforehand. And so far, it's been working. I've been practicing from a home studio on and off, mostly from home studio for 14 years, 15 years since I started, since I became a yoga teacher. And it's working very well so that I don't have to step out. So it saves my time. I'm not stressed out either. And I can decorate the way I want. I'm not worried about paying the money every month and just making sure that I have enough clients to pay the money. So yeah. Monetary wise, I'm not working for the studio. I'm working for the clients. I'm working for the students, and I'm working for myself. So that's the biggest pro I can say, that I don't have to worry about that paying the amount. Overhead is not there. So my stress level is very low. When I don't have a stress, I can exchange all the positivity, whatever the energy I have, I can share with the students because I'm not stressed out that I have to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean having a studio is a bad thing. The thing is, I cannot really expand a lot. I only take word-to-mouth students or refer by the chiropractor, because you don't want any Joe and Doe coming into your house. I want someone to come in for the right reason.
Right.
So and that limits my business, and that's the biggest con I have.
Well, not only that, but you don't have strangers coming in because you have a proper referral system set up.
That's true. And which is working well for now. You make enough to cover all my costs, like wherever I go for classes or training or dues, insurance, it pays off everything. But more than that, it allows me to learn at home very well. Because when you run a studio outside, you need an assistant. You cannot close the studio. You have to have it like at least 7 days a week or 5 days a week running studio. It's not that easy. It's a lot of overhead cost. And that's something I don't have to deal with. So I'm quite happy. And yeah, it will be a small scale, but I can run it 5 days a week. I used to run 5 days a week. It worked very well. I limit my clients because I can afford to. I used to take only 4 students at a time, 2 on each side, and I'm the 5th one watching from the center. And they're really happy with that space because they have a space to spread their hands. They have a space to spread their legs. And some of the clients says, we cannot practice with guys. And I said, okay, we'll customize that. So I used to have a guy's class different than the girls. So it worked.
Beautiful.
So there are a lot of pros having a studio at home. And luckily, I have separate entrance, so I don't have to worry about opening the main door. So it's working out well.
So Sharmila, anything else we haven't talked about that you wanted to make sure that you told us about today as we get closer to a close?
What I want to talk about yoga therapy a bit, and I did write it, but I'll share that, how my journey started. So I told you that it started in 2008 as a student. 2 years I struggled that do I have to go? And after 2 years, I used to miss many classes, and my teacher was hardcore teacher at heart, and she was a physician as well. She started her practice at the age of 55 as a student. She got the certification at the age of 60, and then she taught probably 70 plus. Her teacher was teaching till age 90, and I had a chance to meet her as well. So I consider myself very lucky that my teacher's teacher taught till 90, my teacher taught till 70 plus. Her students are all my students. And after that, I was thinking what else I can do because I was so much interested in anatomy, physiology. Yoga allows you to learn all that, but still you're not learning about the physiological process. You're not still learning about biochemistry. You're not learning all that. You're not learning the disease base, like chronic disease, various kind of disease, and what are the things needs to be done. You're not tapping into the research as well because they don't have to. And so I said, okay, well, I want to get this yoga into medicine. That was my goal, actually. And it started in 2010. 2010, we visited India. My dad stayed back in India and to get a phone call from my sister that dad had either attacked, he had a COPD. I knew his condition because I helped him here in Canada. So I booked my ticket and went to India. And I was with him. I knew his physiology. I knew his condition, COPD. It's nothing to do with his heart. But one of my doctor was Chinese, explaining to me what's happening with his body. And his heart was compensating for his lungs. And that's when he was having a hard time. So anyways, he was in an emergency in ICU. And at that time, I was reading a book written by Atul Gawande, who is a surgeon, and I love his writing. I love his articles. He writes for New York Times. His book was, I think, Complications or Checklist Manifesto. I'm not so sure which one, but I was carrying that. And he had the case exactly written in there, what my dad was going through. So I was reading that, and I started reading on the internet. Lot more details about his condition. So reading all about the medication, side effects of medication, talking to the doctors, what needs to be done. One of the hospitals says we cannot do anything anymore. We've given all the medication we could. You have to let him go. And my heart was saying, no, I cannot let him go. I know his condition. And luckily I had friends who were heart surgeon or pulmonologist, and I was talking to them as well. And then I spoke to my friend in India who's cardiologist. I said, I need to change the hospital. He was on a ventilator on the mask. We decided to change the hospital, took a charge. We changed the hospital, my dad's main caretaker, the cardiologist, who is friend. And I had access to ICU. Like my room was right outside his ICU. And I was watching a number. He was attached to oxygen, whatever the numbers I could see, CO2, O2 changing every time he loses the breath. So I would go in and say, Dad, breathe. You need to breathe. You need to breathe. I remind. So he was there in a month and a half, he was in the hospital. For 21 days, I was doing that with him. Dad, as soon as I see the CO2 is rise and O2 is drop, I would go inside, Dad, breathe. Dad, breathe. And I put down my foot for open heart surgery. I put down my foot for, they said he may have to go through dialysis. And then I checked what are the medication he's taking. They showed me all the medication. I spoke to doctors here in Canada, one of my friend. He said this medication is banned in Canada. That may be causing his kidney some damage. So ask him to stop the medication. We stopped that medication. Function came out really well. Next day, they say he doesn't have to go through dialysis. So that allowed me to empower myself to get into more than just yoga, into yoga therapy. And I started looking into how can I do medical yoga? I did not know yoga therapy exists at that point. And that's when I found out yoga therapy. And that's when I started looking at where can I go for yoga therapy. That's when I found out in Ontario, there was only one institute who was offering, which is Welkin Yoga Life Institute. I wanted to make sure the yoga therapy where I will be doing is certified or accredited by IYT. So that's where I ended up going to work in Life Yoga Institute, and the rest I did at Heart Yoga Wellness. But long story short, my dad came out after a month and a half. I worked with his walking and everything. I brought him back to Canada, but in the back of my mind, what if that doctors are right? He needed to go open heart surgery. In India, they didn't do open heart surgery. I said, no, he's not going to go through that. But here, I took an appointment with thoracic surgeon. We went to the pre-op appointment, and thoracic surgeon checks him, asks him all the questions, and he threw file across the table. He says, who told you that he needs a heart surgery? He does not need a heart surgery. If he ever needs, he may need lung transplant and no heart surgery.
Wow.
And that made me to jump into this field of yoga therapy, that how much breath works. Breath may not be the only thing work, but what it did to me was it kept me grounded to work with the doctors, work with my dad, and stay calm and clear to attain the goal. And that's something I will never forget. And that's got me into yoga therapy.
It's such a beautiful story, personally, and then eventually professionally. And I think, as our kind of final wrap up, it just shows how powerful connection, love, support, and breath are. I mean, if I were to narrow down, you did many, many things for your father so beautifully. But as yoga therapists, we can lean into love and connection and support and breath. And know that that is going to make a huge difference for people.
It makes a huge difference. And what I tell people, this should be mandatory at school, university, because once you have a knowledge about yourself, it's a good to have, because when you see the doctor, doctors does a lot for you, no doubt about that. You need them. But when you go to them, you will at least have information, and you will ask the question based on the information you have, which will move you from fix me to fix yourself.
Yeah.
You no longer will be in a dependency mode. You will have clarity, you will have knowledge, and you will empower yourself. And that's why I think yoga therapy and yoga has to be mandatory. It's just like having a vaccination mandatory before you admit into school. Having that yoga philosophy, that will take care of so many mental health issues, because it's not what you practice on the mat. 90% you're off the mat. But you can still practice yoga through just having that awareness.
Beautifully said, Sharmila. Thank you for being here with us today. It was such a pleasure to get to know you for the first time. I hope we can stay in touch, and I'm really certain that our listeners will really resonate with everything that you said today. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you so much for having me. And I'll be happy if anybody has a question or talk to me. I'm very open to that. I learn every single time someone asks me a question, so I encourage all the questions. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you to Sharmila for being with us today. And she gave us so many jewels of knowledge and wisdom and experience. I hope everyone appreciates her openness and willingness to share all of the secrets that she's learned. Not everybody is that open. And it was just so clear to me that she had a pure heart and wanted all of us to be successful in all of the ways that we are of service in the world. And maybe the most beautiful thing that she talked about today is this idea of sangha, of community, of bringing people together, coming out of the harsh world and all of the news cycles and all of the stress and strain and problems that people are having, and bringing them into a sacred space, a space where it is safe, where their nervous systems can actually relax, a space where she is going to show up in a balanced, positive way, and she may be the only refuge that they have all week long. And think about that. We are yoga therapists. We might be the only refuge, the only safe space that people come into contact with all week long. including their own homes and their own families, may not be a refuge. And so this idea of what I call the peaceful sanctuary, where we come together and you almost start anticipating the safety and the connection and the ability of your whole body and mind and spirit, having that opportunity to let down at least once a week, if not more. To me, that's what we are doing. And it matters how we set up that space. It matters how we welcome people. It matters how our own nervous systems are as a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist, how we show up. And so in order to provide that experience, we can't be too haired out. We can't be too busy. We can't be in fight or flight. We can't have traveled so much, jumping all over from here to there, that we're not showing up with a really regulated nervous system ourselves, because that's the biggest gift that we're giving. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I think it's something I've been thinking a lot about lately, and how to structure my life and my business in a way that that peaceful sanctuary is something that I can offer to the clients, whether it's online or in person. I think it works both ways, but I just wanted to really highlight that part of this episode and just say thank you to Sharmila one more time. All right. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. After several years of beta testing, we are finally ready to build a community around a mobile app, the Optimal State app on Android Store and in the iPhone Store. On this app, we're going to start hosting classes, regular meditation circles, and really start to build a community of yoga teachers, yoga therapists, Ayurvedic practitioners, and healthcare practitioners that want to come together on a regular basis and have a community that is empathetic and compassionate and kind and full of goodness that wants to grow spiritually together. So come on over to the app. You can download it now, try it for a month for free, and we'll be having regular community online offerings through the app, and we would love to see you over there. All right, we'll see you soon.
A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.